this is my weekly podcast, Adventures with Postpartum Depression, a show dedicated to sharing stories and spreading awareness about maternal mood disorders. For show notes and more information, please go to my website, ppdadventures.com. There's also a Facebook page, facebook.com/ppdadventures. And now, on to the show. Hi, everyone. This is Courtney, and this is episode 35, and this is going to be a great episode, and I feel like I keep saying every sentence is starting with the word this, and now that I've noticed it's going to become a thing, I'm really sorry, but that's okay, because I'm totally planning on a quick intro here, because I am utterly brain dead, sitting on the front porch, because I can't wait for Pippa to fall asleep, but I didn't want to subject you to the background noise of Paw Patrol. Anyone else? Paw Patrol, have, like, kids who are obsessed with Paw Patrol. I hate that show so much. If you can at all avoid it, please keep Paw Patrol out of your lives. But, okay. She's got a cold. Julian's got a cold. It's good times here. But this is going to be a great episode because at long last, I got to sit down over Skype and chat with Graham Seabrook. And she is going to be talking about her postpartum adventures, and a lot about self-care and her personal quest to figure out, well, what does this self-care business mean, and how does it work best for me and for other women, and what can I teach other women, and how can I bring women together? And you're going to hear about her Facebook groups and the online classes she's working on and her coaching, and it's just, I'm so glad we finally got to do this, because we've been talking about this for months and months, and then we met last October at the Warrior Mom Conference, and we connected really well. She's one of those people who, you know, most Warrior Moms, no, I'm going to take that back, all Warrior Moms, I am yet to meet a Warrior Mom who I don't just easily connect with. We have that shared darkness, and we've been through that same hell, and maybe we just recognize a fellow traveler. But Graham is my people, and I was just so lucky to do this episode because we talked. We'd already scheduled our interview. Okay, so for those of you who aren't fully into the world of postpartum progress, I did talk a bit about it last week. Postpartum Progress is the nonprofit that did the Climb Out of the Darkness and hosted and put the entire Warrior Mom Conference together. And I really enjoyed my work with Postpartum Progress and thought they were an incredible organization, and still think that. They did accomplish some amazing, did such amazing work. But the nonprofit they've decided to shut down the nonprofit, and Graham was a key player in that. She was a staff employee, and the day before our interview, she resigned from Postpartum Progress, and her resignation prompted me to do some really intense soul searching and really just get in touch with my intuition, and I decided that I had to resign my role as a Warrior Mom Ambassador, and I spoke to Graham on Sunday. We'd already scheduled the interview way before she resigned or the incidents happened that caused her to resign. Well, that's her story, and I say the incidents, and she wrote this blog piece and said it was the last straw. So the thing that caused her to resign really was a straw, but it was a straw with other straws before it. So I say incidents that caused her to resign. There really was only one that I am just rambling, and I am so brain dead, and I should not be tackling such an important subject with this brain deadness. Long story short, I got to speak to Graham during this shitstorm that happened, and, oh, hi, new listeners, I have a potty mouth, don't listen to this show in front of your children, but you probably shouldn't listen to a show that really digs into the darkness of postpartum depression in front of 8-year-olds, spoiler alert, but if you must, you must. Anyway, so me and Graham had already scheduled an interview, and we talked about it and decided to not dig into everything that was happening with Postpartum Progress. We didn't know yet that Postpartum Progress was going to shut down the nonprofit operations. We just had no idea where things were going to go. And neither of us was ready to really talk about what had happened, hash things out. And so for those of you who maybe heard that this episode is Graham's interview and thought, ooh, I really want to hear Graham's side of the story, I hate to disappoint, but that's not happening. This isn't a gossip show. This is a show about real women's stories about postpartum depression, and that's the work I want to continue doing. So, you know, we're here to listen to Graham and her journey through the darkness and her triumph over it and all that she has wrought from that darkness. And I think you're going to really love getting to know her. And I have the show notes will be available at ppdadventures.com. And you just click on the menu bar on the top, and there's a little click for podcast, and you head over, and it will be the, if you're listening to this in somewhat real time, they'll be at the top of the queue. And for episode 35. And I will give you links there for her self-care squad on Facebook and for some other great work she's doing and her website and, you know, her, where you can find her on Twitter. I will give you all of that there. Graham and I, we've only met, this was only our second time talking. We got to have breakfast together at the Warrior Mom Conference, but that's it. I mean, but she's just, for me, so easy to talk to that the first few minutes of the interview, it might feel like you're eavesdropping on two people, you know, two friends meeting up for the first time in 6 months, which is actually kind of what you're doing anyway. And if it gets, there's a story, we might be a little confusing about this, but we both have children similar ages, and her son and my daughter were born around the same time, and we both had our postpartum depression adventures at the same time, but didn't know each other. And then we still didn't know each other, and we both got pregnant with our second, and we both had our second child on the same day. So Julian shares the same birthday as Graham's daughter, and they may or may not be betrothed. Try to keep that on the down low so that, you know, because if they know about it, then it'll never happen. So we have to, you know, pull strings very stealthily. So if you can't understand, we do try to clear it up, but we do also laugh a lot. And, you know, even as we dig into the darkness, I think it is important to keep laughing and to find humor where we can. So I'm sitting here with an envelope with my notes on it. So now I'm just going to check my notes because that is how brain dead I am. And I'm just not kidding, folks. Pippa's preschool had to shut down on Monday. They just unexpectedly announced it last Friday because they've been such a virus going around. They're like, we have to deep clean everything. And so she was healthy on Monday, but school was closed. And then today, Wednesday, not so much healthy. And I think like a couple of weeks ago, I would have sent her to school in this condition because, I mean, she's just congested and sniffly, but that's, like, not against the rules, but they're, like, really, like, in a panic about this virus that's been going around Pasadena, so it's like, okay, I'm gonna keep my child home, even if it, you know, is a little crazy, because almost four-year-olds are crazy, and by crazy, yeah, by crazy, I mean assholes. Most of the time, she's so sweet. We're in this phase where she says, I love you, like, 40 times a day. And sometimes it does get a little annoying because it's, I love you, Mommy. I love you, Pippa. I love you, Mommy. I love you, Pippa. And it's like, okay, we just said it 8 times in a row. Can we stop? But then I take a moment, like, okay, she's going to be 16 one day. And she will not say I love you for weeks or possibly months. And so I need to store up this excess of love right now. Because 92% of the time these days, she's just sweet as could be. But then there's this 8% of the time, and she's just this total asshole. And it's the sort of stuff that makes me question my existence and the meaning of life, and am I doing a good job, and makes me run for the parenting books, and then run to my journal and cry in the shower. And luckily I'm seeing my therapist tomorrow because we weren't able to see each other last week. And it's like, okay, I need that pep talk. Thank God my therapist is good with kids and has grown kids so that she can give me some perspective. For those of you in the Pasadena, LA area, don't forget to check out Playing Monopoly with God, Melissa Bang's one-woman show that is coming to Pasadena for its first California performance. You can go to playingmonopolywithgod.com. It's her show about her actual experiences with postpartum psychosis. And it's supposed to just, I've heard great things, and it sounds like it's going to be one of those shows where you're laughing or crying the whole time. So would love to see you there Friday, March 17th. There's still tickets available. Saturday, March 18th, pretty close to sold out, if not sold out already. But I will be at the Friday show and would love to see you there. So that's it. I think I can finally turn this over to Graham. And man, sorry that you had to listen to my brain dead ramblings for so long. This was supposed to be a 4-minute intro, and now I'm past the 10-minute mark. But I love you, and I know you're going to love Graham. Hi, Graham. Thanks for being on the show today.
Hello.
Well, I know so much about you. You know, I feel like before we get started, we should do full disclosure to everyone about
yes.
our babies and our November 2nd connection.
But we never planned it. Like, it's not, you know, it's not like we said, hey, let's get knocked up at the same time. Like, that's not...
This is true.
That's not what we did. We didn't even know about it.
Until we met.
Like, right. So it's not... because I feel like when we explain this, people are like, huh, are they sister wives? Like, no, we're not.
No.
They just happened... Maybe they knew each other before we got pregnant with them. Maybe there was some, like, really cool past life stuff that we just don't even know about.
Yeah, so for people who are now totally confused.
Oh, right, our kids were born at the same time.
Like, literally, like, C-sections, babies coming out of our bodies at the same time.
We never actually explained the thing we thought we were going to explain. It's good, I have coffee, I'm fine.
To people who have listened, that exactly, they know how much I can, like, stumble over my words, so they're used to this insanity.
Those are the cool kids.
Yeah, and yet they still make the choice to be here.
Right, because they're the cool kids.
Yes, yeah, you are all the cool kids. So Graham and I met last November in Atlanta. No, October. Oh, jeez, see?
Seriously, it was October.
It was October.
It's good, we're fine.
October's basically November, just without the turkey.
I'm going to use that in the future.
Yes, you can. I give you all the licensing and trademarking on that.
It is. October is basically November. And it was at the Warrior Mom Conference.
Yes.
And I don't even know, how did it come up? I think we were talking about what we were going to do after the conference, and I said something about how, like, Rory's birthday is coming up, and I need to, like, plan stuff, or I hadn't planned anything. I know I hadn't, because I don't plan things. I remember it was at breakfast, but I don't remember, like, exactly how the whole conversation came up, where we figured it out. Like, oh my God, same day.
Same time.
But there's time changes, so they weren't born at the exact same time because there's time zone stuff.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
So.
Yeah.
We'll move on.
That was a really good intro. I feel like
it was
snappy. And everyone's going to know exactly what's going on now. And that wasn't confusing at all.
No, it wasn't.
We're so good at this.
That we both had our second... babies made mine's made possible by Zoloft. Was yours made possible by Zoloft?
Yes. In fact, I remember, I don't know if you were part of the whole meditate on this hashtag campaign that happened a while ago. But there was some type, she was a guru of some sort. She was one of those women that everybody pays attention to, because she's like talking about, I don't know, she had a book out. Marianne Williamson, I think is her name. And it's some type of like self-care, self-help something. And she had written a blog post about holistic ways you can fight depression. And how if women who had postpartum depression would just truly meditate and stop falling into the trap of big pharmaceuticals and like all of, you know, I know that you've heard this exact same thing a million times. We have all heard this exact same thing a million times. And so, yeah, it was Jenna and a couple of other people from Postpartum Progress that were just like, yeah, I don't think so. And a hashtag got started called Meditate on This. And it was just the rest of us kind of saying, hey, Marianne, meditate on this. And it was slightly rude, but very effective. And one of the things that I did was I posted a picture of Rory at the time that said, this baby made possible by Zoloft.
Aww.
And I have never in my life, and I have posted a lot of things about sexism and racism and politics. I have hit all of the nerve points that should get you hate mail and death threats and horrible stuff online, you know, because we hear all these stories about how horrible online spaces can be, right? I have never gotten as negative a response in my life as I did over that picture. That picture of me and my baby smiling and my, you know, this baby and this smile brought to you by Zoloft, meditate on this. And I got just the most evil, horrible things said to me in private messages.
Of course.
And, you know, it was on Twitter, and I, like, reported them, and I did all of the stuff, and eventually Adam was just like, stop. Stop reading it. Step away. Like, walk away. But, yeah, she was completely – the only reason she's alive is because I got on Zoloft. It's the only reason that I am still here. So, you know, it's the only reason that my family is intact. Not the only reason. No, it is the only reason, because it was the Zoloft that allowed me to go to the therapy sessions.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
The Zoloft that allowed me to start exercising. It's the Zoloft that allowed me to start eating better and to find out that I had, like, these weird sugar triggers that I never would have known about if I hadn't. The Zoloft gave me just enough of a boost so that I actually cared about whether or not I got better.
Yeah.
Not enough to totally get better on my own, but enough to be like, oh, now I have enough energy to do the work that my therapist wants me to do. And to actually, like, get out of bed and get to the therapy appointment. So, yeah, this baby brought to you by Zoloft. Heck yeah, I should buy her a t-shirt that says that.
Oh, yeah. I want that t-shirt for Julian.
Yeah, I mean, because, God, like, I'm totally worth it. She is adorable. I mean, I might be a little bit biased. I'm probably a little bit biased.
No.
But she's the cutest kid. I'm sorry that none of your kids are as cute as my kid is. I'm sorry. I feel very bad for all of you that have to suffer with kids that are just like 99% as cute as my kid is. She's just the best. And I didn't have that feeling when Andrew was born. And I was very, very sick, even though he is objectively as beautiful, because I make cute babies. But I didn't have that feeling. Like, I never had that his whole first year. I never had that, like, oh my God, look at how cute she is. Like, it just didn't happen. I faked it really well for Facebook.
How long did you fake it for?
Oh, Lord. Months and months and months. I probably started actually meaning it close to his first birthday. Before that, I could kind of, like, every once in a while I would see a picture of him and I'd think, oh, that's a really cute baby. In the split second, it took me to realize, like, oh crap, that's my baby. There was this disconnect. And there was not a feeling of, like, that weird almost feeling of ownership that being a mom gives you, where that's like, that's my baby, you know? It took a really long time for that to kick in, and it's really sad now, because now I look back, and he's almost four, and his whole first year is mostly a blur, with some very sharp moments of clarity, and every single one of them is a bad moment of clarity. Like, the moments that I remember are all very sad, desperate, triggering kind of things. None of them are, you know, all of the happy, smiley, giggly pictures that I took a ton of pictures. And all of those pictures that pop up, you know, in that little thing on Facebook that's like 1 year ago today or 2 years ago today, you know, every year when those pop up, I don't remember them. And I have to either just accept that, or I have to talk to Adam and he'll tell me what it was. You know, if he was home and if he was around, he'll tell me like, oh, this is when, you know, we did this thing or that thing, and he'll walk me through what it was. But I don't have it. I don't have it in my mind the same way that I have, like, I have all of her life is in my head, and forever all of her life will be in my head. You know, there's not a part of her life that I don't have. And there's a huge chunk. To me, it's a huge chunk. I know it's only a year, and I understand that, like, by the time he's 21, it'll seem much smaller, you know. I know all of those things, like, logically, but it's the first year. It's the first one, and sometimes I get really mad because I want that back. That's not fair. I didn't do anything. That's crap. There was no good reason for me to not get that first year. I deserve that first year. I'm the one who had to carry him around for 9 months while he kicked the crap out of me from the inside. And he did. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. So why don't I get that first year? You know, why is it just gone? And I've done a lot of work with my therapist around that, and quite honestly, you know, unless I wanted to do, like, experimental memory retrieval type stuff, it's really gone. It's just gone. So yeah, I'm making my peace, sort of. Sort of.
No, I just want to hug you. How do I Skype hug?
No, I need to Skype hug. I really want there to be, like, a thing. There needs to be. Somebody would make $1 million if there was a way that I could pay somebody to go to my friends' houses and hug them. Because especially, like, doing this kind of stuff, you know, you listen to a podcast or you're, like, online somewhere on some type of social media, or you get an email from a mom who's hurting, or and you just want to hug them. But they're in Canada. Or, you know, I'm in South Carolina and they're in California, or they're in, you know, Atlanta or Alabama or whatever, and you're like, I can't walk 500 miles to hug you. There should be a button that I can push and you get a hug.
Yes, and it's not a creepy hug.
Yeah, no, not a creepy hug. No, but there should be like a, I don't know, somebody needs to figure that out. Google could totally figure that out. You cannot convince me that Google could not do something about that.
They could.
Yeah.
So, okay, so your first year was a blur. When did you know you had postpartum? What's your little list of?
I didn't know. Adam knew. And I should have known because I had had depression before. So I, you know, it's so funny. I looking back now, you know, you see those lists of risk factors, and I'm just like, yep, that one, and that one, and that one. I'm like going down the list, just checking stuff off. Like, oh wow, I was always going to get sick. It takes a little bit of the guilt away because I had like all of the, not all, that's exaggerating, but you know, if I had ever seen that list before I was pregnant or while I was pregnant, I would have been like, oh crap, we need to do something because I am checking off every single thing on this list. And yet I still didn't realize it when it happened, even though I was 34 when I had Andrew, and when I was in my early 20s, I had a round of major depression, and it was months of therapy and medication and a support group and all of those things. And so you would think that I would recognize the symptoms. But when you're in it, you don't. When you're in it, it lies to you and says, you're supposed to feel like this. And so I had no clue. And it was really Adam, and it was Adam's mom. His mom had anxiety. after his younger brother was born. And so she, like, he was saying to her, why does Graham hate me all of a sudden? Like, she just hates me now, and I don't know what I did. Like, and one time she said something about, like, well, you know, you might just be an asshole. Which is what, like, I love her for a million reasons. That's one of them. Because she's like, that's the type of mother in law that she is. She's so fabulous. But then she said, to, you know, she said, you might be, but you might not be. And you, like, maybe you need to think about what you're doing. And it was good because he did. Like, he's very logical. He's a software engineer. So he stopped and thought about what he was doing. And he came to the conclusion of, like, no, I'm doing all the things. No, this is, it's, something's wrong. Like, the fact that she said, stop and think about what you're doing, and then he actually did, he was like, wait, I'm, you know, I'm helping with the baby at night, and I'm, and he was doing all of the things. So much more than so many of my friends who've had kids, you know, so much more than their partners or husbands did. So he went, wait a minute, he's not right. And at the same time that he was coming to that conclusion, I was Googling, why do I hate my husband? Why do I hate my baby? Why is everything horrible? Like, I was Googling all of these things, like, I started just Googling the word rage and pregnancy, or rage and baby, I think was the combination. Rage and baby was the combination that brought me to a blog post on postpartum rage that was on the Postpartum Progress blog. And I went, oh my God, like, I, that was when, like, the skies parted and the sun came out, and I was like, oh, holy crap, I am not crazy. I might be crazy. it was like, this might be a real thing and not just me being a horrible person. Cause I thought it was just me being a horrible person. And because it didn't feel anything like my first depression had. My first depression had been super classic, like, could not get out of bed, didn't take a shower for like a month because I just had no motivation to do anything, lost like 20 pounds. It was just really textbook, and a toddler could have diagnosed me. This time it was insomnia, rage, anxiety, rage, overeating, rage, some depression that would then swing into rage. And so I didn't, none of that fit that, like, commercial version of the mom walking around with the little cloud over her head, you know? Mm-hmm. No one tells you that throwing things could be a sign of postpartum depression. And I had started having panic attacks at the thought of leaving the house. Like, not at actually leaving the house, just thinking about going to the grocery store. But my panic and my anxiety also manifests in anger. So, what it came out as was, you know, why do I always have to be the one that takes care of everything? Instead of, like, I am too scared to walk out of the house and take care of anything. I couldn't, you know, even in my own head, I wasn't making that connection. I thought I was just angry. I was a big old mess. And the morning after I had done all of that Googling and reading, and of course, once I started reading, then, you know, you get to the end of any blog post and it's like, here are some other things that connect to this. And so then you click on that, and then you click on another thing. And then, like, I had at some point, like, six windows open on my computer, and I had been reading for hours, and I didn't sleep at all that night. But I didn't, for the first time, did not feel alone or terrified. And then the next morning, Adam said to me, honey, I think something is really, really wrong. I've been thinking about this. And it was at the same time that I, you know, it was just perfect. It was perfect timing because I was like, oh my God, me too. Something is really, really wrong. And I think I know what it is. I found this place and these people say that I'm not totally crazy. And, you know, then I was able to give him links because I had found Postpartum Progress, and PSI. Oh, crap, there was another one. Oh, there was the one in Charleston that I'm actually a board member of now. I found Postpartum Support Charleston. Because once I had the word postpartum, then I started Googling more postpartum stuff. And so then I found, like, all of these blog posts from all of these women. Sometimes it was just one post. It would be, like, they would have a blog that was about, like, healthy recipes for your kids. And also, I had postpartum depression this one time, you know? Sometimes it wasn't even what their whole thing actually was. It was just that, like, a moment of honesty that broke through. And they were, those women saved my life. I don't even remember all of who they were. I wish I had kept better records of that night so that I could send them an email or something and say, like, thank you, you know? But that's why I tell people now who are sharing their stories, it doesn't really matter if they comment or not. I never commented on any of those blog posts. Like, the people who wrote them had no way of knowing that I ever read it. Beyond, you know, going in their analytics or whatever and doing, you know. They had no way of knowing that they saved my life that night. So you can't count your worth in comments or numbers or because you have no way of knowing who's reading you at 3 o'clock in the morning, sitting on her couch, holding her baby and sobbing because she feels like you're sitting on her couch with her. You know, even if you're telling your story, like the women that are coming here to you and telling their story to you, you guys have no idea. We right now have no idea of knowing like when, who is listening to this and when. And if you are listening to this at 3 o'clock in the morning, sitting on your couch and sobbing, please know that I did the same thing and everything's going to be okay. It is. There's also tons of other women sitting on their couches sobbing right now. And that makes me angry and I want to fix that.
Yes. So.
Sorry, I just ran on forever. Oh, Lord.
No, they're sick of me. They've heard too much of me talking.
Oh, goodness.
They're all listening. Who is this Graham woman, and when is she starting her podcast?
I do not need... Nobody needs me talking more than I already talk. Oh, boy.
So, all right. So, you and Adam both kind of have a meeting of the minds.
Yes. So yep.
What happens then?
He went to work and I started again Googling. I am a very online person. Just, it's my comfort zone. I'm not comfortable face to face a lot. I like having a screen. So it was wonderful for me that there are now that we're living in, you know, at that point, 2013, and that there were so many resources online. Because I got on my insurance page and started Googling therapists and like trying to match up, you know, who was covered. Was I covered? I had no idea what my coverage was. So like, was I covered? If I wasn't covered, were we going to be able to afford this? Oh goodness, how many millions of dollars was this going to cost? And then finding a person and then having to make that phone call. And for a person with anxiety who hates the phone, and yeah.
I had to have my mom call. I had to make my mom call my, who did my mom call? My mom had to call Nathan when I was in the obstetrician's office getting the diagnosis and being told you're going to the hospital. I was like, I cannot call Nathan. I need you to do this, Mom.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Thank you for saying that because I was like, I sat there and shook and cried. And I remember that I needed to put Andrew down because it was time for him to take a nap, but I couldn't put him down because it was like comforting in some way to be holding him. It stopped me from totally shaking. You know, you can't completely shake that much if you're holding the baby, right? You have to hold the baby. You can't drop him. So I just kept holding him and made the call on speakerphone. And I was really lucky. The women in my therapist's office were amazing. I saw somebody at the medical university here in Charleston. They have a whole psychiatry department. I am lucky on many, many levels. First of all, I'm lucky it was covered under my insurance, and I am lucky that I live in a city that has a medical university, you know, so that there was a department of psychiatry. I didn't have to look for a therapist. I didn't have to look for a psychiatrist. I could go to a place and have everything covered in one spot. Super lucky. I didn't know that at the time. I thought that that's how it was, you know. I called them, and there was something in my voice, because she said, at first she said there was going to be like a 2-month wait for me to be able to get in. And I know I started, like, that's when I started actively crying. And I said, I can't do that. You have to help me. And she was like, hold on. And it was one of those things, you know, where you hear them put the phone down and then you can hear stuff happening, but you don't know, you know, there's papers rustling and there's voices, but you have no idea what the heck is going on. And to me, it felt like hours. It probably was like 20 seconds in the real world. And then she came back on, and she had a meeting with one of the doctors for like 2 days later, if I could be there at like 9 o'clock in the morning. And I had no idea how any of that was going to work. Because we didn't have childcare at that point. So like, now you have 2 days to find a babysitter that you can deal with your anxiety with. The levels and the layers to this, it's so complicated. I don't think people understand how hard it is when you say to somebody, you know, oh, you need to just go see a therapist. Oh, okay. Now there's 15 more hoops I need to jump through.
Yes. Oh my God. I didn't want to call my doctor because I figured it out. And for weeks, I was like, she's going to make me get a blood test. And I can't do that. I was just like, a blood test? That there's just too many anxiety hoops.
So, yeah, I mean, I finally got in to go see. I think that first time, like I said, everything's really blurry. I believe that that first time that I went, Adam stayed home from work and kept Andrew that day because he wanted to be. No, he drove me. Oh, God. No, he drove me. Now I'm remembering. He drove me, and they were in the little waiting room area. And I saw her twice that first week, and then I saw her once a week after that. And she was amazing. She was like, I got really lucky. The woman that I ended up seeing was the head of the department, and she had had a cancellation. It was like the only reason that I got in to see her, because nobody gets in to see her, you know? And then she ended up retiring, and it was terrible. And I'm still very bitter because she left me. I mean, it was fine. It was like I was good. I was in a really good place. And before she left, she made sure I had names and stuff of other people if I needed them. She's still not forgiven, though. I think if you have a good therapy experience, you can get very connected to that person. And it's really, really hard when they, you know, do human things like retire to go have a real life. Whatever.
No, you were her real life. I don't like that.
I totally was. It took a really long time, though. I mean, I saw her once a week for, God, like, over 10 months. It was a really long time.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah, it was not, people ask me all the time, like, when am I going to start to feel better? And, you know, it's a hard question to ask. Like, I have no idea. And I really wish that it was tomorrow. I wish that that was the answer. but for me, it was like a slow and steady thing. There was never a, oh, wow, I feel so much better. It was as if I was in a room that was like 100 degrees, right? And somebody turned it down by 1 degree every week. Like, yeah, eventually you feel better, but how long would it take you to notice? Mm-hmm. You might not notice until you were at 90, and then it's 10 weeks later, and you've been making progress this whole time. This whole time you've been getting better, but it's so slow that you don't even feel it, and by the time you're at 90, 90 is your new normal, so you still don't notice, and then you're at 80, but 80 is your new normal. So you still think that, like, oh, I'm never going to get better. And it's not until you, like, stop and turn around and look at, like, the months behind you where you're like, oh, I am not having panic attacks every day. I am now having them twice a week, which sucks, but not as much as every day. You know, like, it took forever. And I was very, very jealous of the people in my support groups who were like, oh, finally my medication has kicked in and I can feel the difference. And I was like, you suck. I always said it in my head. I never said it out loud. But I was always secretly petty. And just like, man, I'm just jealous. I was just jealous. I was so, you know, because they would start to smile again and they would start to be able to function again. And I couldn't see my own progress. And I was so frustrated. But every time, Zoloft for me works in a very small window. If I go too high, it's very, very bad. If I go too low, it's like turning off a light switch and nothing happens. So whereas other people were able to play around with dosage and play around with what time of day they took it and play around, you know, and change medications and try different things, none of that really worked for me. For me, it was slow and steady and therapy every week and, you know, putting the puzzle pieces together. And it was the exact opposite of my personality type, which is like, fix everything now, move on to the next thing, conquer the world. So it was a challenge.
And throw a baby into the mix.
Oh, yeah. And he stopped sleeping when he was 4 months old.
Oh, how thoughtful.
Like the 4 month sleep regression that I didn't know was a thing until after it happened. But the 4 month sleep regression that is usually like a couple of weeks of crappy sleep. And then they get back to their routine, lasted for us until he was 9 months old. So what ended up happening was the way that we ended up working it out was that I would go to bed at like 8 o'clock. And Adam would stay up with Andrew until like 2. And then I would get up, like I would be, you know, Adam would, he usually woke up around 1. And so after that 1 o'clock wake up, Adam would come to bed and he would put the monitor on my side of the bed. And so whatever time Andrew woke up, then it was my turn to get up. And then so I was up and if I could grab some sleep on the couch or whatever, you know, that was how our trade-off worked. We just split the night. So Adam stayed up really late. I went to bed really early. But what that meant was that, you know, he was coming home from work at 5 and we had a couple of hours to see each other maybe. And those hours were also like his time to see Andrew. Like it wasn't, there was no time for us. And I was still sick this whole time, you know, and still really, really struggling. So there was a lot of stuff that he had to take over, like dishes and cleaning the house and doing the laundry, because I just couldn't cope with that. But I also, my anxiety was so bad that having it undone, I also couldn't handle that either. So I would struggle through trying to do things that I really couldn't handle. And it would take me forever to do the laundry, but I would stay up until like midnight trying to do it. And then I would need to be up at 2 to handle it. Like it was all just a big mess. It was all a big mess. So that was the sleep schedule that ended up working best for us, except we really missed each other and we were both really lonely and sad. Like it was just sad. We were like, God, is this how our life is going to be? This sucks.
Yeah.
You know,
where's that life where, you know, the cool parents at the restaurant with the sleeping baby?
Yes.
That's what we sign up for.
Oh my gosh. And it didn't help that my mom, every time I saw my mom, she would say things like, oh my gosh, Adam helps you so much. Your dad never helped me. And I was like, we're just trying to survive. This is not, like, I'm not being pampered right now. I'm not sitting in a bubble bath with him bringing me bonbons. That is not my life. I am really trying to think of reasons to not kill myself every day. But okay, great. Yes, dad sucked. Like, all right, okay, whatever. You know, yes, let me carry that weight too. And sit here and make you feel better. Let's have conversations right now. With my bags under my eyes and the fact that I smell because I haven't taken a shower and my hair is all a mess and I'm very obviously not doing well, but let's have conversations about you. Because how can I support you now?
How can I support you?
How is sleep? How can I help?
Let's talk about you.
So it was, you know, it was fun. And then really, really what was great, like I told you, I'm a big online person. So eventually there was a day when like the 3 hours of sleep and the caffeine hit just at the right time so that my brain worked long enough for me to go, wait a minute, I can't be the only one who has had this problem. And I started Googling like sleep, help me make my kid sleep. And there were all kinds of books and like Facebook groups and stuff. But then there was also this thing called the baby sleep site, I think, baby sleep plit. I'm not going to get this name right. I'm not going to get it right. Baby sleep site, I think. It was a website with this woman, group of women, who are sleep coaches. And at the time, they had a money back guarantee thing going on. I don't know that they still have it. I don't know. So I don't want to, like, I really don't know that they still have it or not.
No false hopes.
But yeah, but they had a money back guarantee thing going on that if you, like, you had to follow their steps and stuff. But if you didn't see improvement, not that your kid would be like magically sleeping in a night or whatever, but if you didn't see improvement, then you would get your money back. And it wasn't even that much compared to the hell we were living in. It was like $100. It was not, you know, at that point, I would have been willing to sell my spleen for somebody to fix this. And what ended up happening was they sent us this huge long questionnaire of like, basically tell us every single thing about your child and your life, which is great to try and do when you're massively sleep deprived. And I sent it back to them. And within a week, it was a couple of days back, we got this really, they must have been, and they are really good at dealing with people who are sleep deprived, because it was a step-by-step, this is exactly what you were going to do. And it was written in a way that like a first grader could understand, which was good. Cause at that point our brains just literally weren't working after those months of not sleeping. They put us on a very strict schedule for when he was eating and how long he was napping and how, like, all of a sudden our lives had a schedule. They had a framework, they had boundaries, and I knew what to do. Somebody was telling me, if he's not awake by this point in the morning, wake him up and make sure that he's eaten this many ounces by this time. Like, it doesn't matter what it is, feed him whatever you want, breast milk, formula, food, cool, but it has to have been this amount by this time, you know. And it was, I think we sent them like one or two emails for clarification where we were like, all right, we don't know how to do this, or we've run into this kind of a roadblock. But within a week, he was sleeping better. Within 2 weeks, he was waking up twice a night, and both of those times were just to take a bottle and pass right back out, which was basically he was sleeping through the night. Yay. And our lives changed dramatically, because all of a sudden I could do the work from therapy. I could work out. It felt like it was huge. It was a huge difference. It was a huge, huge, I can't overstate the difference. To the point that when I got pregnant again, one of the first things that I did was contacted them and was like, all right, what do we do with a newborn? Like, how do we do this right from the beginning? How do we do this right from the beginning so that we don't fall into this thing again and have to, I don't want to have to call you guys, you know, at 4 months. Like, I want help right now. And they helped us set up a plan that was basically, you know, when they're a newborn, you just do whatever they want. But it was, you know, what to start, like sleep cues to start looking for and all of this stuff. And I just felt much more prepared the second time. So it was good. It was a big deal.
My anxiety level just went down.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
it's just like the idea of sleep deprivation for anyone at this point,
right?
Just like haunts me. Like, oh, it's the worst.
Yeah, I don't think that people don't really understand that haven't been through it how everything is harder. Everything takes longer. Decision making is harder. Like, your brain really just honestly does not work. And Adam started doing, like, after we were better, he did some research and found out that, you know, there's a certain level of sleep deprivation that is like having had 3 alcoholic drinks. And then there's a certain level that's like, they compare it to levels of drunkenness.
It's sleep torture.
But then you have to fully function as a human, like, you know, and a lot of people are like, oh, it's fun to be drunk. Right. Would you like to live your entire life that way? No.
I can't. I don't get drunk anymore. I'm not a good person when I'm drunk.
No. I would if I didn't have 2 kids.
Yeah, I guess I'm really fun. Like, dancing on table person.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
But, you know, now at this point in my life, I would dance on a table without alcohol.
No, I would want to. I would see you dancing on the table and be like, oh, she's having so much fun. Why can't I do that? But I would not be able to do it. And I would sit there and just be super jealous the whole time and really, like, want to be you. And I would not be able to do it. But 2 or 3 drinks in, I'd be like, move over!
Get me up there!
Yep. But then in the morning, when Rory decides to wake up at 5 o'clock, I would be like, why did I do that?
Yeah, I just can't do hangovers anymore.
Nope. There's no time.
No, there isn't.
There's no time.
So what should we talk about now? Because I want to talk about your self-care squad and your coaching, but I also want to hear about Rory and your relapse. There's too much good stuff to talk about.
There's too much good stuff. Well, those are all connected.
Okay.
They really are all connected. So both times I've gotten pregnant, we've been on birth control. Adam is weirdly proud of that. I think, right? Like, that's not, I can't imagine a woman being like, yeah, got knocked up on birth control. Like, I am not proud of that. I'm slightly annoyed, but he's got this weird, like, yeah, I did. I don't know. He's special.
I am so magic.
He's a special guy. I mean, I'm going to keep him, but he's special. So, but when we found out that we were pregnant again, I panicked. And this was like, panicked for a reason. This was not an anxiety, like, sickness panic. This was like a, oh crap, can we handle this? How am I going to do this kind of thing? And so I did what I do. I went online and I started Googling things, and I found a wonderful group on Facebook that was for moms having a baby after having a PMAD. And those moms gave me tons of, like, you need to buy this book and you need to, like, make a list and you need to, you know, there was so much information that they gave me. Those moms were amazing. And then I got this notebook and I started making a list of all of the lists that I needed to make. Not a list of everything I needed to do, but a list of all of the other lists. And then I actually made those lists. This is how my mind works. And I'm sorry for everybody who has to hear this. It's scary in here. So I made a list of all the lists. Like, I need a list of books, and I need a list of websites, and I need a list of, I need a to-do list for each month, and I need, yeah. And then I started making all of those things.
You my people. You're so my people. I've made lists of lists before.
I can't do spreadsheets. Adam is a spreadsheet person. I can't do spreadsheets because you can't make lists in a spreadsheet, and it frustrates me. And I need to be able to connect things just the way my brain works and not necessarily the way Excel thinks my brain should work. So, yes. And as I was making all of these lists and finding all of these resources, people were talking a lot about making sure that you had a therapist. People were talking a lot about risk factors and knowing what your risk factors were, having a plan for after the baby came, getting a doula. And I had never heard of a doula before. Had had a baby, had never heard of a doula before. These are the things that frustrate me. All of these things, the more I learned, quite frankly, the more angry I got, thinking, oh my God, if I had known this the first time, right, things would be so much different. And putting it all together, the more that I learned about self-care, like that word just kept popping up, self-care, self-care, self-care. Moms need to pay attention to self-care, and moms need to focus on self-care. And I was like, well, what the heck is that? Why is nobody defining it? And so I think at one time I put in like definition of self-care. Like, who is going to tell me what this is? Because I'm not going to have time to take a bubble bath when I have two kids. That's, you're dumb. So if that's what you're thinking, like, I don't have time for that. Unless you're going to also, like, unless this baby is going to come with a maid and a nanny, then what are you talking about? And so I started just finding, like, most of the stuff that you, like, if you just Google self-care, see what comes up. Bath bombs and essential oils and mom's night outs and stuff that's all fabulous. Like, I am not anti-bath bomb. Give me all the bath bombs. In fact, if you have some that are free, contact Courtney and she will give you my address. But it didn't seem like any of that was going to stop me from getting PPD again, which is really what I was looking for. And then I found my super wonderful therapist, Sarah. I call her Sarah the Super Shrink, even though she's not, just because I like alliteration and because she's super and fabulous. And she said to me, why don't you define self-care for yourself? Why don't you figure out what it means to you? This is obviously really bothering you because you keep bringing it up and you keep trying to find a definition that you like. So why don't you just own it and you do it? And I was like, I don't have a good answer to that. Which happens a lot when I talk to her. She says things that are super smart, and then I usually just say, well, if I wanted to fix my problems, I wouldn't be here. And she laughs at me. That's kind of the way our relationship goes. She's fabulous. So I did. I started this group on Facebook for absolute, like, not knowing anything about anything. I started a group on Facebook called the Self-Care Squad, and I said, we are going to figure this out together. And I made up like a graphic for the, you know, you need a picture to start a group. So I made up a graphic and I went in one of my support groups and was like, hey, I did this thing. Who wants to come over? And for a really long time, not much happened because none of us knew what the heck we were doing. And I didn't know what I meant. And at the same time, I was reading all of the books and I was getting bigger and bigger and bigger and more prego and more prego and more prego. And I was trying to figure out, you know, what the heck, like, all of this was happening at the same time. And then the night before Rory was born, she was a scheduled C-section. So we knew, you know, it was the night before she was going to be born. I looked at Adam and I said, you know what? No matter what happens tomorrow, we have done everything that we possibly could. Like, we are as ready as we know how to be. And that was a really good feeling. And it sparked this thing in my head that I was like, maybe this is what self-care is. But then, you know, I was having a baby the next day, so I didn't get to finish up that thought, you know? But we had done all of these things. We had a plan for his parents. We're going to watch Andrew for at their house, not at our house, for like a week and a half. So that even once we came home from the hospital, it was just going to be the three of us. And we were going to have time to figure out what that meant before there was a 2-year-old that came busting in, you know. Our freezer was packed with food. We had talked to my dad, and my dad was going to pay for somebody to come in and clean the house once a week for like 2 months, which was like the best present ever. Rory was born in November, so that ended up being my Christmas present too. I was like, look, we don't need like a christening present. We don't need a, you had a baby. Like, this is what we need. And we had been very honest and very upfront with all of our family. Like, this is what we need. We need food. We need diapers. We need you to come over and clean. We need you to walk in the house and not pick up the baby. We need you to walk in the house and start doing laundry. Or don't come over. Like, we felt secure in saying those things because I had been so sick for so long the first time that we felt like we could say, look, this is a life and death situation. And so if you want your daughter or your daughter-in-law to thrive, this is what you are going to do. And all of them were like, yes, sure, of course. Like, and I tell people all the time, when you are having, you have their grandchild. That is the most leverage you're ever going to have over another human being, ever, ever. I don't care if you know the dirtiest piece of dirt about somebody. It is not the same leverage as saying, if you want to see your grandchild, you will do this laundry. They will do anything. Now, granted, not everybody. Some people are just horrible. But use that leverage. Like, gosh, you know? And it was amazing. It worked. It helped. They understood, the grandparents understood they could come to the hospital as much as they wanted and they could stand there and hold her the whole dang day while I was in the hospital. That was fine because I wasn't going to get any privacy in the hospital anyway. So, okay. But once we came home, they could come over for half an hour and that was it. Half an hour a day. Like, that's it. It's all that we have. We have to figure this out. For the first week and a half while they had Andrew. And then once we were all home, once everybody was home, then it was like, that's fine. Then you can come an hour, 2 hours, come and have dinner that you're bringing with you that we are not cooking. We were just way more upfront about what was hard and what wasn't. And that really helped. So that's when I started actually being active in the self-care squad, was once I started to get the idea that maybe self-care is different for everybody and maybe it's deeper than scented oils and maybe we needed to look at what we actually needed. And maybe self-care was being very literal and caring for ourselves. Right? Like in a very literal, like, no, I care about me. Not me because I am a mom, not me because I am a partner, not me because of any other reason than that I am myself. And so I deserve care. And once I like put that notion out in the group, women were like, oh my God, that's not possible. No, I take care of myself so I can be a better mom. And I was like, but what if you didn't? What if you just took care of yourself just because you wanted to, because you deserved it? And so many conversations started happening. Like, it was amazing. It was amazing. That was when the group took off. That was when the group became what it is today, which is a bunch of women who are supporting each other and pushing each other, but in a really supportive, like, loving kind of a way, having each other's backs, giving each other great, amazing advice, and being a place where you can come and just be super honest.
And this isn't super just
about, like, when you screw up, you can be super honest. You can be super honest about anything in that group.
And this group isn't just for moms with postpartum depression right now.
Nope. It's all women. Any woman. And in the broadest, for me, I also wanted it to be in the broadest definition of woman possible. Trans women, women who, you know, are transitioning either way. You know, anybody who is feminine. Because I feel like as soon as you start to gravitate towards a feminine identity, or as soon as you start to claim that for yourself, there is a whole list of rules that goes along with that, and one of them is that you no longer matter, except in relation to what you can give to other people. Mm-hmm. So, it's all women with a Y. All the women. I feel like I'm like Beyonce or something. Like, oh, single ladies. Okay, I'm not gonna sing. That's what's in my head right now. But yeah, that's where it started. And then I started taking classes to become a life coach because people were asking me for advice all the time. And I thought I wasn't good enough. I had ideas in my head of like, hey, I think maybe you should try this. It was never advice that I was giving them. They would ask me questions and I would always ask them questions back. And usually the questions that I asked back kind of set off little bombs in their head. Like, that was what I was good at. I was good at people having a problem and coming to me and me going, all right, well, try answering these questions and see what happens. And usually one of those questions was like, oh my gosh, oh no, now I have all this work to do. It was what they usually came back with, was like, oh crap. But yeah, I was good at that, and I was good at, like, nagging people to keep them accountable. Like, you said you were going to do this thing, so why hasn't it been done yet? Like, I was good at momming people, really. I was good at mothering. And I realized that that's what a life coach does, but that I really wanted to focus on moms. So it all kind of happened at the same time, you know? And then I started the blog, and the blog was mostly just to talk about all of the things that made me angry while I was going on this journey. Why don't moms know what the risks for postpartum depression are? Why aren't we telling moms what the difference between depression, anxiety, OCD, PTSD, psychosis? Why don't they know this? Why isn't every single mom being screened? Why aren't they being screened by their pediatrician? Why, like, I mean, the 10 million questions that I'm sure that everybody has, those were the things that the blog was, like, me shouting into the universe about and crystallizing my thinking on, like, trying to figure out, because when you're writing about something, you have to get specific and you have to figure out what you feel like the problem is and what you feel like the solution is. So it's a good mental exercise to do, too, to figure out, like, what do I want to do about this? And then the self-care coaching kind of turned into also pregnancy and postpartum coaching. Like, okay, because a couple of women came to me and said, all right, I'm reading your blog post and I'm starting to freak out because I am pregnant. And this is my first kid and I don't know what the heck I'm doing, but I'm starting to feel like there are all of these things that I should know that I don't know. And then I went, oh yeah, that's true. It has to be really overwhelming. Okay, I can help you do that. And I went back to that notebook that had the list of all of the lists. And I just pulled out the ones that were most helpful for their situation. And I was like, all right, this is what we need to figure out for you. You know, and you just start at the beginning of wherever they happen to be, because everybody is in a different spot. What are your risk factors, and what does your insurance look like, and should you start talking to a therapist now? Do you have any symptoms? What month are you in? Do you have a birth plan? Like, there's a million questions. And helping women set up a postpartum plan the way that Adam and I did, and helping women step into that role of thinking about themselves. Most people have a really great idea of like what they want the nursery to look like and kind of what their birth is going to look like, right? You might even think about how sweet it's going to be when your husband drives 2 miles an hour on the way home from the hospital and like yells at all the other drivers. But I really haven't met anybody who has a very clear picture of what it's going to look like after your mom leaves or your mother-in-law leaves or your aunt or whoever. What does it look like at the end of the first month when it's just you guys?
I'm so glad you're doing this.
Yeah.
This has been on like my, but you know, like when you have like 100 ideas of how to help, but you're called to, like, I'm called to do this podcast.
Right.
Thank God you're doing this, because now I have
thank
someone.
God you're doing this podcast, because I don't want to do a podcast.
Right. You see, we all have the thing we're called to, and it's like, all right, I can now tell people Graham has this figured out. You need to talk to
Graham.
Yeah,
I got a system. Yeah, I can. Yeah, like I literally have a system. What I'm working on right now, like what's in the thing, two courses, what I would love to do is to be able to just sell it and anybody can just take it and we can make it less, much less expensive. Because working with me one-on-one, like my pregnancy and postpartum package is like $350 for an 8-week package, which isn't huge. It's not $1 million, but depending on your situation, it might be more than you've got.
Right.
You know, and I can break that down, obviously, into payment plans and stuff, but still, it still might be more than you've got. So I want to try and figure out a way to make it less expensive, but I still also have to feed my children.
Yes.
So there's like a balancing act, right?
And you know, if we were men, you would never even have to justify it.
Oh, well, of course not.
You're like, yeah, of course, I'm valuable. My time's valuable. Pay me.
Right. Yes. And you... Oh, 1,000,000%. Oh. 1,000,000%. But yeah, so I'm trying to make it a course, an online video course that you can take that, of course, will not be as specific, like, you know, right. It won't be as personalized. It'll be a little more general. So there might be information in it that doesn't work for you, but that does work for somebody else, you know. But that's the only way that you can do an online course.
Right.
But the benefit of it is that once I make it, I only have to make it one time. And I can sell it multiple times. And then I can do it a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
Like a lot cheaper. So, yeah. And then I'm trying to put together, that's it. That's about halfway written. I'm also doing one called the Self-Care Bootcamp, which is almost finished.
Yay!
Almost finished. That one is way closer to being finished. And I'm also working on doulas have been calling me, and La Leche League leaders have been inboxing me, and friends of mine who are, because I do have a bunch of friends that are doulas, have been saying, okay, how do I get all of your information to my clients? Because if I just tell them to go to your website, sometimes they do and sometimes they don't, and I want to make sure that they get this information. So I've been trying to figure out how to put together like a toolkit for doulas that they can use, so that they can like just hand over, you know, like a little booklet or a something that says like, look, this is all your stuff and it's all in one place and here. And so that the doulas that have had PPD can use this as a way to talk to the ones who haven't and say, hey, here is your, you know, trying to put together some type of doula. Who knows? They're asking me for it. I'm working on it.
You'll get it. They will get it.
I'm working on it. So, but right now, like, there's some stuff that's already done. On the website right now, there is an email class. It's a free class that you can sign up for, and you can take about lowering your risk. And that works for everyone. So if you're a mom who is, had a PMAD, or just is listening to this because you're interested or whatever, and you're pregnant right now, that is something that you can take for free. It's 5 emails that I send you that have, like, little things that you can do right now that will lower your risk.
And it's awesome. I know one of the moms from my support group is doing it, and she just loves the help you are giving.
I loved writing it. It was so much fun. It was so much fun. I was like, ooh, I can just help people right now. That's amazing. So yeah, there's that. And then the birth plan is up. I created a video training for the birth plan. I wrote my own birth plan because one of the things that I did when I made the list of all the lists is I made a birth plan, but my birth plan, I wanted to research complication information because I know I had a lot of birth trauma that fed into my PPD. And my first C-section was an emergency C-section. I had preeclampsia. I had no idea what any of that stuff meant. When I was lying in the hospital bed and they said preeclampsia, I didn't know if that meant I was going to die or if that meant like, oh, we're going to give you a pill. I really didn't know. Even after having taken all of the birth classes and all of the stuff, So I wanted to create a birth plan that had information about the most common complications that are going to happen in pregnancy. And maybe what do you want to do about them? So that if there was another mom and they said, you know, there's meconium stained liquor, she would know, okay, probably going to have a C-section now. That's the way this goes. And so that if there was another mom that said, you know, like that said, oh, your labor is stalling out. Oh, okay, I'm probably going to have the chosen. Like, this is not life and death. I just need to take a deep breath and do, you know, because I think we automatically go,
right,
when there's medical information that we don't know. And there's no reason that moms shouldn't know this.
And our doctors don't have the time.
No,
to they don't get have this time. Done to like walk us through each scenario. So
not at all. And one of the best things that I have learned about when I put together my birth plan the second time, because I had done all of this research and I knew what my risk factors were, when I went in to talk to my doctor about my birth plan, I was done. Like, my birth plan was filled out. I was like, these are the two questions I have. And then she did have time to answer those.
Right.
And walk me through, like, you know, what if this happens again? And I know that this is what I am really at risk for. And, like, what if this happens? She had time to do that. So the birth plan is an education tool for moms and for dads or partners or, you know, everybody. And it's a communication tool that you can use. Like, when you're done with it, you take it to your doctor and say, okay, now these are the things I have questions about, instead of, like, everything. We've now narrowed it down to the specific things that you have questions about. And I feel like it empowers moms too, because they're not going in, or it empowered me. And the moms that have taken it so far, that have taken the class and used it, used the birth plan, have been like, yes, I felt like I knew what I was talking about, and I was no longer intimidated by nurses or doctors or midwives or people throwing around language. I knew what I wanted, and I knew how to stand up for it. And I talk about baby-friendly hospitals in the birth plan training as well, and how to navigate, like, if you don't want to breastfeed, how to have that conversation.
Right.
If you don't want your baby rooming in with you, if you know that you need to sleep and it's a trigger for you, but your hospital doesn't have a nursery anymore, like, you need to make a plan about that. You need to know that that's a thing before you get to the hospital, you know? So education and communication and empowerment is kind of like the idea behind the birth plan. And so far it's working. I'm also, of course, already editing it in my head for like a version 2 already, because I can't like stop.
That's what we do.
That's how my brain works. So there's like a million things happening. There's a million things happening all at the same time. But all of them are great. And I'm really happy with how things are now. And
where do people find you online?
Oh, it's postpartummama.org. It's all one word, postpartummama.org. And on that website, there's a link to the Self-Care Squad. And Self-Care Squad is free, and it's on Facebook. So as long as you have Facebook, that's really all you need. And you can just come in and hang out with us and hang out with us, because I think we're pretty cool. And I do free classes in there every Thursday night. We do free classes on, like, different things. They're all the ideas of things that I want to put in the course. So I use squad members as guinea pigs.
And I love the squad. It's one of my favorite groups on Facebook.
It makes me happy. It makes me really, really happy. Like, even if I'm having a bad day, there's always somebody in there that's like, oh my gosh, you guys, guess what? I had this conversation that I was really scared to have, or I took this chance that I thought I could never take, or like, I dyed my hair purple and I never thought I would do that. Like, there's this whole range of things that are self-care, you know?
Yes.
That these women are doing, like, this whole range of things. There's women in there who are, you know, getting pedicures, and then there's women in there who are like, I got a therapist. And we are just as excited for both of them. We're, like, super celebrating both of those things.
Someone posted today that she's playing co-ed basketball.
I know!
It's like, yes, that is self-care. You would never think, like, self-care is supposed to be just this one little mani-pedi massage spa day, and you know what? Some of us, it is basketball.
Yeah, she's actually one of my coaching clients, and that was like the breakthrough that we had that morning. I was like, why are you did this thing once, and it was so much fun, and why the heck are you not doing it every week? And normally I let people discover things on their own, but with that one with her, I was like, no, we are making room for this in your life, because you just lit up. She lit up like a I don't know, like neon. She was so happy. And there was just no way I was going to let her not feel like that every week. So we are making a plan to put that into her life every week and make time for that in her life every week. And she contacted me this morning. She was like, why am I so happy right now? I got 5 hours of sleep and my kids are like terrorizing my house and they've broken 3 things and I'm so happy. I'm like, because you know you're playing basketball later. Own it. Yeah.
All right. That's, I think on that note.
It's just not self-care for me. I would fall down and break something.
No. Not my self-care.
Not at all. But it really is for her. And it made me, I closed that email and then I started crying because I was just, I never thought that I would be able to find a way to help moms, all kinds of moms, and also help my family at the same time, like help support my family. And one of the things that postpartum depression took away from me was feeling like I was contributing to my family because we had to spend money on my medicine and we had to spend money on my therapy. And we had, you know, Adam had to spend so much time and energy putting all of us back together. And I felt like I was taking. And now I feel like I am giving. And I am giving to moms. And I am able to give to my family. And it's just, I'm not going to cry on your podcast.
Everyone cries on my podcast.
It feels really good. It feels really good. So, yes. Yeah. I didn't know that all that was in there. Oh, okay. Okay. Therapy tomorrow is going to be fun. Good time.
We won't even touch that.
Good time. Yeah, there's some other stuff.
All right, so I think on that note, we'll say goodbye.
Okay, and thank you for like letting me ramble for a million hours.
Oh my gosh, you are welcome on the show whenever you want. You are the best, and I love you, and I am coming to South Carolina one of these days to see you again.
Double birthday party. Let's do it.
Yes.
Don't even come here, though. Let's go to Hawaii or Bali or, I don't know, someplace with a beach and Cabana Boys. We need Cabana Boys.
Yeah, I mean, well, Julian can be one of our Cabana Boys, but we need real Cabana Boys.
Yeah, no, we need real Cabana Boys with, like, muscles and things.
Yes.
Yeah, the guys don't need to know about that part.
No. That's why we'll say goodbye and stop recording before they hear more about Cabana Boys.
Yeah, okay, all right.
So that's it for this week. Didn't you love Graham? Isn't she just amazing? Don't you just love her energy? Oh, go check out the Self-Care Squad at Facebook. I'm there. I love it. It is such a great supportive group of women. Head over to the show notes, ppdadventures.com, to find all the places where you can find Graham and follow Graham and get in touch with her. She is just such a fabulous person. And really, these are the reasons I'm grateful for my postpartum depression, because how else would I have ever met Graham but for having traveled through the darkness myself and being brought together by postpartum progress. So, thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you for putting up with my brain dead intro and now my brain dead closing. And my tongue is just getting thicker with each word, so I'm going to wrap this up. Postpartum depression is just an incredibly lonely, heartbreaking illness. It's a physical illness, and yet it has all these mental, emotional, spiritual symptoms. But you are not alone. You did not do anything wrong to bring this on you, and with proper support, you will make a full recovery. I love you, and have a great week.